Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph of the Technicolor Dreamcoat. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase. And in the event of war, join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labor. They were ruthless in all the tasks that they imposed on them. Skip a couple chapters. And Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Other traditions call it Sinai. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses! Moses!" And he said, "Here I am." And God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." God said further, "I am the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" God said, "I will be with you." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them," also notice where Moses' fear is. I'm just going to add a quick addendum. He doesn't say, "What if I go to Pharaoh and Pharaoh says, what deity sent you here?" That's not what he's nervous about. He says, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is this God's name? What shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "Eyeh asher eyeh. I am and will be what I am and will be." And added, "Here is what you say to the people of Israel. Eyeh, I am, has sent me to you." God said further to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, Yud, He, Vav, He, Adonai. Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations." I was pretty spoiled this week. I had two dinners out. One dinner was a first-time dinner with some wonderful people whom I really didn't know. a simple dinner with easy conversation that was delightfully punctuated by children's laughter and their drawings and stickers. And before we knew it, more than 4 hours had gone by, which is a bit more than the 20 minutes my supervising pastor once said should be the upper limit of a pastoral visit. I know, right? The other dinner was, I calculated, about the 10,000th dinner with a wonderful person that I do know pretty well, but I am always learning more about. A fancy dinner at a restaurant to which we probably won't return. Delightfully punctuated by a children's book. This one right here. To celebrate 31 years of marriage and 33 years of really liking each other a lot. And this is what the book looks like. Bob, could you go to the next one for me? We have the cooler blue cover. It was written in 1963, when I was a year old and Barb was two. And it's a delightfully simple explication of how people who like each other are with each other. The first page, if you could give us that, Bob. I like you, and I know why I like you. Because you are a good person to like. But it's not all it's not all easy stuff. There's a page that says, and I like you because when I am feeling sad, you don't always cheer me up right away. Sometimes it is better to be sad. You can't stand the others being so googly and gaggly every single minute. You want to think about things. It takes time. In the last page, that's because you really like me. You really like me, don't you? And I really like you back, and you like me back, and I like you back, and that's the way we keep on going every day. Thanks, Bob. You can go to the next slide. The best books for young people and adults are about how encounters and relationships change us. The Velveteen Rabbit, The Little Prince, George and Martha, Big Wolf and Little Wolf. These books all let young people and the adults who are brave enough to read them think about the deep questions of who am I? Who are you? And what happens when those intersect? You never forget the wisdom of the skin horse, who said, real isn't how you were made. It's a thing that happens to you when a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you. Then you become real. Who am I? Who are you? And what happens when those intersect? Those are basic questions with which we are invited to wrestle in the best literature. And it's a basic question we're invited to wrestle with in this ancient Hebrew story of Moshe, Moses, turning aside to study a burning bush that was curiously unconsumed. I remember reading about one rabbinic commentator who wrote that in all probability, this bush had been burning there for days or weeks or months even. But Moses was the first person to actually turn aside and take notice. Everybody else who saw it was too busy or too important or was on their way to something else, and the bush was invisible to them. Moses said, I must turn aside. I love that. That means if I had any thing with myself, my ego as at the center going this way, I had to let that go, drop it, and turn aside to go and see this curious thing, this great sight. William Blake, that amazing artist who is well known for illustrating Pilgrim's Progress and Inferno and Paradise Lost, amazing watercolor artist, was having a letter argument. Those must have been great. Nowadays, you know, we just have tweet storms, right? 140 characters of vitriol and stupidity. Back then, you had letter arguments, which were 6 pages long, and you had a week or two to think about it. And he was having an argument with a very shallow pastor, I know they exist, who thought his stuff was too metaphysical and was not real enough. And William Blake told him that he had a problem with his eyesight, his spiritual eyesight. He wrote, the tree, or the burning bush, the tree which moves some to tears of joy is in the eyes of others only a green thing that stands in the way. Some see nature all ridicule and deformity. And here he was talking about the caricature artists who were very popular in the day. And by these I shall not regulate my proportions. And some scarce see nature at all. But to the eyes of the human of imagination, nature is imagination itself. As a man is, so he sees. As a woman is, so she sees. Moses, shedding all ego, decides to see. The intersection of people with people changes things, changes people. The intersection of people with love, with truth, with the divine, changes deeply. It transforms. It makes you weird. It makes you take off your shoes on holy ground. It makes you think you can change the world. Here's the thing. Again, I've preached on this a whole bunch of times. And I've read the story a whole bunch more times. But here's the thing I never noticed in the conversation between Moses and God. Actually, before I go into the story itself, I want us to think a minute about how it is we usually talk with each other and how we usually interact. And I realized I caught myself doing it about 20 times today. Shake your hands, and everyone said, "How are you?" Now, we have different ways of dealing with that, right? How are you?
Fine.
Or, not too bad. No one thinks when you ask, "How are you?" do you really want me to sit down and talk about how I am? Well, I've been having some existential crisis recently. But really, when we're asking, "How are you?" what we're really asking, and we're scared to, because it would be impolite and get into people's faces way too much, is, "Who are you? Who are you today?" And that would require way too much time to sit down and actually talk about. And you can't do it during a 3-minute shake and bake, whatever we call our shake and something. I'm not sure what it is. So. What? Eat and greet. Meet and greet. Meet and greet. Now, sometimes if you shake hands and say, "How are you?" and people are like, "Oh, fine." No, really, how are you? Then we might get some biography, some autobiography, maybe a list of things that hurt. Well, my elbows, or my daughter's, here's a thing. But we usually stay at a fairly safe level on that. Who are you? That's a tougher question. And notice how when God says, "Okay, Moshe, I want you to go do this thing," and Moses answers, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh?" Now, he's doing two things. He's doing three things. One thing is he's saying, "I don't want to do this," but doing it in the polite, Middle Eastern, humble way of doing it. Who am I? I am nobody. It's polite Middle Eastern humility and fear. I ain't nobody. Why are you asking me? Or, "I'm too scared to do this. This is crazy. Pharaoh's the most powerful human being on the planet. This is not all right." But the literal question he asked is, "Who am I?" is exactly the right one to ask. Who am I? How can any of us be about doing what we do until we have a dim flicker of an idea, a clue about who we are? And yet most of us go around life being perfectly busy doing. But how aimless is that if we don't know who we are before we start doing what we do? And God's answer isn't, "You're Moses, you've got talent, you're smart, you're brave." God says, "I will be with you." Who am I? I will be with you. Now, at one level, it's answering Moses' fear. "Dude, I've got your back." But at a deeper level, it's about answering Moses' deeper question. Who am I? And the answer is, "I will be with you." Your existential question is answered by relationship. Remember earlier we talked about all the best kids' literature is about how people intersecting with people make change. It changes people. And the intersection of people with the divine transforms. Who I am is answered most clearly by the question, whose am I? Who do I belong to? In part, will answer the question, who am I? I belong to Micah and Chloe. So who I am is answered in part by, I am their father. Now, am I having to redefine that with them living 4 hours away? But I am father. Teller of dad jokes. Fixer of scraped knees. Wiper of tears. Many-voiced reader of all 7 Harry Potter novels. Snuggler, wrestler, repairer of bicycles, waxer of skis, and 1,000 other roles. I belong to Barb. So who am I is answered in large part by I am husband and friend, partner, lover, teller of dad jokes, vacuumer, laundry washer, opener of jars, bed warmer, and 1,000 other roles. I belong to you. Not in a codependent, unhealthy way, but I belong to you. So I am pastor, preacher, attender of meetings, teller of dad jokes, home and hospital visitor, counselor, occasionally called to be caster of vision or reminder of callings, and maybe not 1,000, but maybe 100 other roles. So who am I is in part answered by whose am I? Relationships, the biography. But there is another layer even deeper than that. Under the biography, under my roles as dad, husband, pastor, neighbor, citizen, consumer, there is an even deeper I found only in my relationship with God. Found only in my relationship with the ultimate thou, to use Martin Buber's term, I and thou. Being itself, the ground of being. The one who called Moses, the one who called me, the one who calls each of you. There I am a wanderer, a wanderer. No longer a role, no more a human doing, but a human being, beloved by a divine lover and thus able to love, not as a duty, not as a role, but as an act as natural as breathing. And in that being, I can relate to all other beings. Not for the roles they play, not how they can meet my needs, but simply for them being. Not dad-kid, but I-thou. Not husband-wife, but I-thou. Not pastor-parishioner, but I-thou. And walking out of the safety of these 4 walls, it's not me and the stranger, it's I, thou. It's not me and the idiot who cut me off in traffic, it's I, thou. It's not me and the brown-skinned person on television that I'm supposed to be afraid of. It's I, thou. I, thou. Moses actually took the time to look, to see. He turned aside. I love that detail. He turned aside to look. He put down his iPhone. He closed out the app. He stopped tweeting for a minute and went to look, to see beauty, mystery, awe, uncurated. It never made it to Pinterest. It was there, right there. He could feel the heat on his cheeks, see the flashing of fire. Awe, uncurated awe. If you can remember back when you were too little to be cynical, the first time you saw the ocean, or an old growth forest, or your newborn's eyes, the Grand Canyon, a lover's face, the pattern on the glistening skin of a brook trout, a fern, a leaf, a blade of grass, the lace wing of a mayfly, really saw, not just looked at, saw. The first step of intersection of person to person is hearing another's stories. But we are also more than story, more than biography. There is a soul that rests under the surface, unperturbed by the chaos on the surface, like a dolphin 100 feet below the maelstrom of a hurricane, aware but not affected. There's a deep you. And that is where God meets us and meets Moses. I will be with you, in you, you in me. You can go to Pharaoh. You can challenge the greatest, most powerful man on the planet. You can challenge injustice. You can challenge a war economy. You can challenge hatred and fear. You can change the world. Who am I? Who are you? I will be what I am becoming. God, too, is beyond biography, beyond time and space and human comprehension. The poet John O'Donohue says, "What I love is that at the heart of Christianity you have this idea of intimacy, which is true belonging, being seen, the ultimate home of individuation, the ultimate source of it, and the homecoming. That's what I would call spirituality, is the art of homecoming." And so it's St. Augustine's Deus intimior intimio meo, God is more intimate to me than I am. Mary Oliver puts it much more poetically. I don't know if she ever saw a burning bush, but nobody knows how to look at a tree like Mary Oliver. When I am among the trees, especially the willow and the honey locust, especially the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. "It's simple," they say, "and you too have come into this world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine." We were created for relationship. I, thou, with other humans and with trees and stone and rock and woods and owls and ospreys and all those Mary Oliver, Wendell Berry, Walton Whitman-y things. And we're created for a relationship with God, to worship and celebrate and exult in it, to live it out in every part of our lives. Put this intersection at the center of who you are. If there is a hole in your center, fill it with God's love that we meet in the Rabbi Jesus. If there's something else there in the way, a crippling need for approval, an addiction to dull the pain, a hunger for accumulation, a need to control, if there's something in the way, be like Moses, turn aside and look. You can trust God to come in and help you, and help you in the removal process, and help you in the healing process, and help you in the wholeness process. Saint Irenaeus said, "The glory of God is a human being fully alive." The glory of God is a human being fully alive. L'chaim, to life. Let's live it. Amen.